Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we will take a look at oral health and what can be done to maintain good dental hygiene. We will also see a unique way in South Africa to fight isolation and loneliness. But first, the United Nations warns that 1 billion people in 43 countries are at risk of cholera. The UN says there are not enough resources to fight the cholera outbreaks, and the situation will get worse with time. The UN is seeking $640 million to fight the infectious disease and warns of a catastrophe if action is not ramped up immediately. So far this year, 24 countries have reported cholera outbreaks compared to 15 by mid-May last year. Experts say the rise of cases is partly due to poverty, conflict, and climate change. Cholera is transmitted through contaminated food or water and can be treated with simple oral rehydration and antibiotics for more severe cases. But many people lack timely access to such treatment. A global vaccine alliance says a shortage of cholera vaccines is likely to last until 2025 as outbreaks surge worldwide. Now to South Africa, where health authorities have warned citizens to take extreme precautions as an outbreak of cholera has killed up to a dozen people and raised fears that it could spread to other parts of the country. Residents of the most affected township, Hammanskraal, just outside Pretoria, have been cautioned not to touch tap water amid strong suspicions that the infection is coming out of their taps. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Safe drinking water is a vital resource that is out of reach for one of three people worldwide, according to the World Health Organization. That includes more than 2 million Americans living without running water, something the nonprofit firm Dig Deep is working to help solve.
Native American families are 19 times more likely than white families to not have running water, and Black and Latino households are twice as likely.
The Navajo Nation is the country's largest Native American reservation, stretching across the western states of Utah, Arizona, and New Mexico. 40% of the population here has no running water, meaning people must often travel up to 100 kilometers into town and back to get it. To help address this water shortfall, the company Source Global has installed hydro panels to collect vapor from the air and create clean drinking water for 500 homes.
When you see a Source hydro panel, it looks a little bit like a normal solar module, except for just a little thicker. And what it's doing is taking in sunlight and air to make perfect drinking water. If you and I were to take one out of a box and set it up on the ground in 15 minutes, half an hour later, we get a glass of water.
Every hydro panel is effectively an independent water supply. That's a life-changing development on the Navajo Nation, especially for older community members.
The reality is that high-income countries have these invisible water crises where the communities within their boundaries that don't have running water are often ignored, and that's just not acceptable.
With climate change and aging infrastructure contributing to population pressures on water supplies, Webster says what's needed is comprehensive, proactive outreach to every community without safe drinking water. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
The World Health Organization says conflict zones and areas with high levels of poverty have been hit hard. The international health body said last week that the short-term outlook for controlling the disease was bleak amid shortages in the vaccine. WHO and partner organizations temporarily switched to using one dose of a vaccine that is normally given as two doses, but they still ran out last December. Gavi Alliance, an international body focused on childhood vaccination, said in a report that there are enough doses to meet emergency demand, but not for preventative use. Supplies are expected to improve next year. Gavi said 48 million vaccine doses have been used in the last 2 years, 10 million more than in the entire previous decade. Cholera cases and death jumped last year as the deadly disease spread to new regions, particularly conflict zones and areas with high levels of poverty. You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
It has been 9 years since Boko Haram militants stormed a secondary school in the town of Chibok in Borno State, Nigeria, and kidnapped 276 girls. This week on Our Voices, we'll be taking a closer look at the impact of the Bring Back Our Girls campaign has had on the region and how girls and their families are affected. Join the conversation Wednesdays at 1900 UTC on The Voice of America.
Welcome back to Health Chat. The WHO reports that more than 1 billion new cases of oral disease have been recorded over the past 30 years. When it comes to oral hygiene, some people in Mali are divided between using a traditional toothstick and the modern toothpaste with toothbrush. And there are some good reasons on each side of the argument. 60-year-old Mam Diawara is one of the few sellers of the tooth cleaning sticks known as toothstick at the Torokorobugu market in Bamako. The market woman believes a toothstick is more beneficial than the toothpaste.
You said it, kind.
I think a toothstick is better for dental hygiene than a toothpaste. Doctors always recommend using toothpaste over toothsticks, but it is the stick that is good for the tooth.
Toothsticks are made from the parts of certain plants, such as the roots. The pencil-sized sticks are chewed on one end until they become frayed into a brush, which is used to clean the teeth. The other end can be used as a toothpick. While Mam Diawara strongly recommends the use of the toothsticks instead of toothpaste, Dr. Mama Tangara, a dentist in Bamako, says they both contribute to oral hygiene.
La pâte dentifrice est un produit pharmaceutique dans lequel on peut trouver des principes actifs.
A toothpaste contains an active ingredient. The main difference between both products is the chemicals. In fact, the toothstick is more comparable to the toothbrush, not the toothpaste. However, we often recommend the use of a toothstick because it helps reduce the presence of a bacterial plague on the teeth that can cause cavities.
Between toothstick users and those who prefer using toothpaste on a toothbrush, the debate continues.
The toothstick comes from our forests and trees. When used frequently, it cleans the mouth, freshens the breath, and can be used any time of the day.
Many people prefer using toothpaste because it's more convenient. A toothstick takes more time to clean and often leaves a few pieces between the teeth, which some can find unpleasant.
Tangara says one must be careful when using toothpaste.
The way toothpaste is stored when exposed to sunlight can damage the quality of its active ingredient.
The dentist says he recommends using a toothbrush with toothpaste or a toothstick on a case-by-case basis. Most oral diseases can be prevented through education and proper dental care, according to dental experts. Dr. Ali Talib, doctor of dental medicine in Purcellville, Northern Virginia, discusses some steps for better oral hygiene.
When we talk about dental hygiene, it's a complex of many things which involve the oral cavity and the nearby. So it's not only the teeth, but also it involves the gum disease, it could be the tongue, also the tonsils at the back of the mouth. So all of those, they can affect your oral. And oral hygiene is divided into just two groups, good oral hygiene and poor oral hygiene. Good oral hygiene can be maintained or it can be established by brushing twice, flossing twice, and do mouthwash every day. And then, of course, get your professional checked every 6 months. And the opposite is true. If you don't do your regular professional cleaning, you don't do brushing twice, you don't floss, you don't do mouthwash, then you're going to get poor oral hygiene. You cannot just take care of the teeth and forget the gums. So, of course, the teeth are taken care by brushing, but the gum is taken care by flossing between the teeth because toothbrush does not reach between the teeth. If there is any disease your body is going to show first in your mouth. So it's very important to pay close attention to what is going on in our mouth. And our blood is circulating through the mouth, going to the heart. It affects your heart. Also, it affects your sugar. It can affect your sugar as well. So if you have a gum disease, you have to be seen by the professional dentist every like 3 to 4 months. And if your teeth are good, normally every 6 months, once a year, make sure you brush the tongue as well, because our tongues have like a hair-like structures, and they tend to accumulate food and everything. So you may clean your teeth and your gums, but still if you don't brush your tongue, you may have a dragon, we call it dragon smell. Toothpick, I mean, it could help in some way, but the floss, the most important part is the floss. Because when you use toothpick, you may hurt yourself, and there is no way you're going to clean all the bag with your toothpick. But with the floss, you can get all around there. And there are some people who try to use like charcoal just to make the teeth like whiter. But in some cases, it can be negatively affect the teeth, because some people, they have already like eroded teeth. And if you use charcoal, which is more abrasive, it can cause more erosion and sensitivity on your teeth.
United States Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy is calling attention to the public health crisis of loneliness, isolation, and lack of connection in the country. In a new Surgeon General advisory, Dr. Murthy says the epidemic of loneliness and isolation has been an underappreciated public health crisis that has harmed individual and societal health. To address loneliness and isolation, the U.S. Surgeon General recommends steps such as strengthening social infrastructure in communities like parks and libraries and cultivating a culture of connection. South Africans have found one way to combat loneliness, the continent's first professional cuddling service, where customers pay for platonic intimacy. Experts say isolation during the COVID pandemic, which hit South Africa hardest, and stress from its struggling economy are just two reasons why the cuddling business is booming. Zahir Kasim reports from Johannesburg.
For some, it's hard to wrap one's arms around the idea of a professional cuddling service. But the business is gaining popularity in South Africa. One company, Pro Cuddling, is leading the way. It was founded by Florence Letswalo.
You know the term, it takes a village to raise a child? It's very much speaks to African cultural tradition. So what happens to somebody else very much matters to me. So yes, it is a business in a sense that you hiring people to work and you have to pay them, but the core values come from very much the culture of what Africa is all about, which is Ubuntu.
Ubuntu is an African philosophy that promotes brotherhood. Professional cuddle therapy is also offered in other countries like the United States and includes a contract like the one offered by Letswalo. She says the contract stipulates that both the client and cuddler can immediately terminate the session if either party says they feel uncomfortable. Letswalo said so far that has not been an issue.
It's a very personalized experience, and there's a reason why people book for cuddling. We live in a society where loneliness is very prevalent. People are extremely busy. And also people don't really have anyone to talk to.
The business has grown rapidly over the last year, according to Letswalo, from having a few requests a week to now having 2 to 3 cuddle appointments a day. Psychologist Anele Siswana says he welcomes this form of therapy and says that it also spreads Ubuntu.
The ethos of Ubuntu have to do with taking care of the other, has to do with brotherhood, with sisterhood. And for me, it's a classical way of making sure that even the service is an extension of that.
Judging by Letswalo's business, cuddling, more than simply physical touch, is gaining popularity among South Africans as a means towards companionship and human connection. Zahir Kasim for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, has called for an urgent scale-up of interventions and funding to respond to rising sexual violence against children and women in the DRC's North Kivu province. Grant Leti is UNICEF's representative in the country. He tells VOA's James Batty that gender-based violence in North Kivu increased by 37% in the first 3 months of 2023. He says women and children in refugee camps are the most vulnerable.
Well, I think, James, you know, the situation has been unstable but relatively constant in the east of DRC since around about 2013 up until 2021. But we've rarely seen a substantial decline in the situation since March of last year. There's over 1.1 million new IDPs, and that's in the space of just over 12 months. And that's being driven by a conflict which is rarely escalated in three different parts of the East. And we are seeing people really in a very, very vulnerable situation. So we are very worried about these trends. And we don't think it's yet come to an end. Things, if they continue in this way, are going to get worse.
So you talk about the number of people in the eastern part of the country, the DRC. I mean, there are many groups that are involved in the crisis there. There's M23 and other rebel groups. The DRC army is also operating there. Who are the people responsible for this alarming rate of rape that you are talking about?
This is a difficult thing to pin down, given that by definition, this is always going to happen in a kind of a clandestine way. So there isn't actually any concrete evidence on exactly who is responsible.
So, and you are calling for urgent and significant scale up of intervention and funding. What activities are UNICEF involved in to help prevent this situation?
There are over 9 major sites just to the north of Goma. We have set up these safe spaces in 4 of those IDP sites, where we are doing a lot of sensitization. So we are putting out information around these risks so that women and girls are aware and they are looking out and taking care about how they go and collect firewood, for example, or not to fall into these traps. So there's the prevention side. We are also talking to authorities. We've expressed our concern, and I think this is not simply an issue which can be resolved by humanitarians alone. On the prevention side, there needs to be a security dimension to that.
That was UNICEF's representative in the DRC, Grant Leti, speaking to my colleague, James Batty.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Researchers at the University of Southern California are using machine learning to analyze brain scans to better predict diseases associated with aging. For VOA, Ginia Dulot has the story from Los Angeles.
University of Southern California researchers are using magnetic resonance imaging, or MRI, scans to determine the biological age of a human brain, which may not always match a person's chronological age, says Andre Irimia, an assistant professor at USC Leonard Davis School of Gerontology.
If a 45-year-old has the brain of a 55-year-old due to poor lifestyle choices, then that can also increase risk for disease, because brains that are biologically older are typically a lot likelier to become ill and to have higher risk for neurodegenerative disease, including Alzheimer's disease.
The USC team used machine learning to develop a program trained on 4,800 MRI scans of healthy brains, which was then tested on 300 patients with neurodegenerative diseases. Software author Paul Bogdan integrated magnifiers that zoom in on different brain regions into the program's deep learning architecture.
The role of the deep learning architecture is to look at each region in the three-dimensional space, see if that particular region contributes to predicting the age, and if it does, it also quantifies how much it can help to predict the age of the brain.
Bogdan says that magnification allows for richer analysis of brain aging between men and women because each gender has different changes happening in different areas of the brain. Researchers say other medical uses for machine learning may be screening circulating blood cells to identify cancers. Jenny Adulo for VOA News, Los Angeles.
Humanitarian groups say they absolutely need full funding of the United Nations' $7 billion appeal for the Horn of Africa during this week's pledge conference, pointing to the growing crisis in the region. The UN says more than 43 million people need assistance in Somalia, Ethiopia, and Kenya. Carl Schembri, East Africa Media Advisor for the Norwegian Refugee Council, says the Horn is facing the worst drought in 40 years. He tells VOA's Carol Van Damme the region is teetering on the edge of the F word, that's famine.
This has really, first of all, displaced millions of people over the last 3 years. Because all their crops have died, their animals, their livestock. A lot of them, particularly in Somalia, have been forced into cities where they've never lived. They've been reduced to begging. And we're seeing rising levels of critical, catastrophic hunger, what we would call normally famine, although for technical reasons it is not declared as such. But they are the conditions of famine. We are seeing people dying.
When you say that, okay, that's what I was just going to ask, that people are dying from hunger. They're not getting enough to eat every day.
Absolutely. We've seen with our own eyes. Our colleagues see it on the ground, particularly most acutely, I would say, in Somalia, where people, especially newborns, younger children, extremely malnourished. Some of them, a good number of them, are also dying. So it's as critical as that. We haven't used the famine word, the UN, and the mechanism around it for, like I said, technical reasons, but it is there and it is killing people. And it is displacing, moving people, making millions of people more and more vulnerable, having to leave everything behind. Families, separated. Sometimes the men stay back in the hope that they can still work the land, whatever that is left of it. But women and a lot of children walking kilometers on end in atrocious conditions. You are right in saying $7 billion is a lot of money, but we are also talking about a lot of people. We're talking about millions, right, of people for whom lack of action can mean death.
And it's ironic, but it's true that there are parts of the Horn where, you know, you talk about this, the worst drought in 40 years, but there's also areas where there's flooding, right?
Absolutely. So most of the drought hit areas are now getting flooded again, also in Somalia. It sounds like a contradiction or a bit of a paradox, but it is part of the whole climate disaster package, if you like. You have months on end, no water. In the meantime, all the community's resilience, all their energies, all their little resources that they have are depleted. Then heavy rains come at once, and they are not prepared to even harvest a grain because it's too much and it just wipes away their own neighborhoods. It sounds maybe a bit strange to have these two extremes in the same places, but that's how nature works.
So under normal circumstances, if not most, many of these people are able to feed themselves, right?
Absolutely. The biggest number of displacements that we see caused by drought and flooding are mainly of people who have their own land, have their farms, or work on other people's farms, doesn't matter. But they make their living through livestock, through agriculture, and they've just now been reduced to total aid dependency because they've lost everything.
That is Carl Schembri of the Norwegian Refugee Council. He was speaking to my colleague Carol Vandam from Nairobi, Kenya. That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For more health news and medical breakthroughs, visit voanews.com and voaafrica.com. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Linoch Mudu. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
Would you like to be famous? Calling us on WhatsApp may gain you fame if we play your message on the radio. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. Here's that number again. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the Internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Tune in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C.
Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight?
Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
Brings you the best in African music on the African Beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05.